Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 27th of August 2007, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll be talking with Tina Rankovic, CEO of Australian Nano Business Forum, about the Australian nanotech industry, COMS07, and a $20 million grant from the Australian government to help develop the industry. We'll also hear how nanotech is helping to make your computer devices even smaller, how new nanotech research is helping to create a real Spider-Man, not just a pretend one, and we'll hear how scientists are trying to find out not only how much a virus weighs, but indeed how you go about weighing one in the first place. These stories and many more in this edition of Azo Nano News. As technology gets smaller and smaller, the computer industry is facing the complex challenge of finding ways to manufacture the minuscule components necessary. A team of National Institute of Nanotechnology researchers has demonstrated an innovative technique for producing very small conductive nanowires on silicon chips. The process can produce nanowires that are 5,000 times longer than they are wide. The innovative technique for producing very small conductive nanowires on silicon chips meets the needs for connecting ever smaller transistors and other electronic components. In one example, 25 parallel platinum nanowires were made using this self-assembly process, with each wire measuring only 10 nanometers in width, but extending to a length of 50 microns. While the idea of wires self-assembling sounds like something from science fiction, it's a natural process. While the new process could provide the solution for computer manufacturers looking for ways of increasing the speed and storage capacity of electronics, it could also mean cheaper electronics as well. Just as compact discs all but wiped out vinyl records, semiconductors could be on their way out too. A University of Houston professor has developed a similar disruptive technology using magnetic cellular networks that could yield such benefits as increased computing power that rivals what is possible with semiconductor integrated circuits. Integrated circuits, which are a microscopic array of electronic circuits and components that have been implanted on the surface of a single chip of semiconducting material, have been the principal component of almost all electronic devices. Compared to the vacuum tubes and transistors that preceded them, integrated circuits have provided a low-cost, highly reliable way for computers to respond to a wider range of input and produce a wider range of output. Dmitry Litvinov, Associate Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering and of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering in the Cullen College of Engineering at the University of Houston, is working with specially arranged assemblies of nanomagnets, or magnetic cellular networks, to replace conventional circuitry and significantly improve computing operations. His research involves a system of interacting magnetic nanocells that could combine logic, random access memory, and data storage in a single nanomagnetic computing system. A nanoparticle drug delivery system designed for brain tumor therapy has shown promising tumor cell selectivity in a novel cell culture model devised by University of Nottingham scientists. The project, conducted jointly in the School of Pharmacy, Biomedical Sciences and Human Development, will be featured in the September issue of the Experimental Biology and Medicine. Therapy for brain cancers is particularly difficult for a number of reasons, including getting sufficient drug to the tumor and selectivity of drug action. The nanoparticles used in the study were prepared from a novel biodegradable polymer, polyglycerol adipate. The polymer has been further modified to enhance incorporation of drugs and make the nanoparticles more effective. Tumor cell aggregates have been used as cell culture models of cancer cells for many years. Similarly, thin brain slices from newborn rats can be cultured for weeks and are an important tool in brain biology. In the cell co-culture model now reported, these two techniques have been brought together for the first time. Physicists have found the formula for a Spider-Man suit. Only recently has man come to understand how spiders and geckos effortlessly scuttle up walls and hang from ceilings, but it was doubted that this natural form of adhesion would ever be strong enough to hold the weight of real-life Peter Parkers. Recent research concluded that van der Waals forces, the weak attraction that molecules have for each other when they're brought very close together, are responsible for Creepy Crawly's amazing sticking power. It's the tiny hairs on spiders' feet that attract the molecules of surfaces, even glass, and keep them steady. Professor Nicola Puno, engineer and physicist at Polytechnic of Turin, Italy, has formulated an hierarchy of adhesive forces that will be strong enough to suspend a person's full body weight against a wall or on a ceiling, whilst also being easy to detach. Carbon nanotube-based technology could be used to develop nanomolecular hooks and loops that would function like microscopic Velcro. This detachable adhesive force could be used in conjunction with the van der Waals forces and capillary adhesion. The theory is all the more significant because, as with spiders and geckos' feet, the hooks and hairs are self-cleaning and water-resistant. This means that they won't wear out or get clogged by bad weather or dirty surfaces and be able to withstand some of the harshest habitats on Earth, including the deep sea. Rice University chemists have found a way to package some of nature's most powerful radioactive particles inside DNA-sized tubes of pure carbon, a method they hope to use to target tiny tumours and even lone leukemia cells. The Rice University study's results are available online and slated to appear in an upcoming issue of the journal Small. In the study, researchers developed and tested a process to load astatine atoms inside short sections of carbon nanotubes. Because astatine is the rarest naturally occurring element on Earth, with less than a teaspoon estimated to exist in the Earth's crust at any one time, the research was conducted using astatine created in a UW cyclotron. Astatine, like radium and uranium, emits alpha particles via radioactive decay. Alpha particles, which contain two protons and two neutrons, are the most massive particles emitted as radiation. They are about 4,000 times more massive than the electrons emitted by beta decay, the type of radiation most commonly used to treat cancer. The speed of radioactive particles is also an important factor in medical use. Beta particles travel very fast. This, combined with their small size, gives them significant penetrating power. In cancer treatment, for example, beams of beta particles can be created outside the patient's body and directed at tumours. Alpha particles move much more slowly, and because they're also massive, they have very little penetrating power. They can be stopped by something as flimsy as tissue paper. University of Pennsylvania researchers have designed a nanoscale system to observe and measure how individual cells react to external forces. By combining microfabricated cantilevers and magnetic nanowire technology to create independent nanoscale sensors, the study showed that cells respond to outside forces and demonstrated a dynamic biological relationship between cells and their environment. The study also revealed that cells sense force at a single adhesion point that leads not only to local response, but to a remote response from the cell's internal forces, akin to tickling the cell's elbow and watching the knee kick. The findings prove useful to more than just an understanding of the mechanics of single cells. Physical forces play a strong role in how whole tissue grows and functions. Using the PEN system, researchers could monitor for differences in how forces are sensed or generated in normal and diseased cells. This could lead to new therapeutic drug targets and to methods for modifying how cells interact with each other. Mechanical forces contribute to many cellular functions, including changes in gene expression, proliferation, and differentiation. Applying shear or tensile stresses to cells in culture, for example, can induce changes in adhesion regulation, intracellular signaling, and cell function, much like internal forces do. Scientists and engineers are eager to understand the secret behind bone's lightweight toughness so they can mimic it in the design of new materials, but previous studies have revealed a number of different strength mechanisms at different scales of focus rather than a single theory. New research from MIT, appearing in a recent issue of Nanotechnology, reveals for the first time the role of bone's atomistic structure in a toughening mechanism that incorporates several previously proposed theories. This mechanism allows for the sacrifice of a small piece of bone in order to save the whole, which helps explain why bone tolerates small cracks and seems to be adapted specifically to accommodate bone's need for continuous rebuilding from the inside out. Unlike synthetic building materials, which tend to be homogeneous throughout, bone is heterogeneous, living tissue whose cells undergo constant change. Scientists have classified bone's basic structure into an hierarchy of 7 levels of increasing scale. Previously, some researchers suggested that the fundamental key to bone's toughness is the molecular slip mechanism that allows weak bonds to break and stretch the fabric without destroying it. Others have cited the characteristic length of a bone's hydroxyapatite crystals, a few nanometers in length, as an explanation for bone's toughness. The crystals are too small to break easily. With unprecedented sensitivity, Carnegie Mellon University's Mark Beer has characterized large viral particles and bulky von Willebrand factors using a novel mass spectrometer. These exciting results may lead to new biological discoveries and represent a step closer to rapid disease diagnosis using mass spectrometry. Mass spectrometers, which separate molecules based on their mass-to-charge ratio, can help researchers identify compounds based on their unique mass and are routinely used to determine the weight, structure, and amount of small molecules or fragments of molecules. Conventional instruments, however, are not equipped to sensitively characterize large molecules over 150 kilodaltons at a low charge state. Many biological molecules are too big to be analyzed efficiently at low charge states using current mass spectrometers. So most scientists break proteins down into smaller fragments before analyzing them in a mass spectrometer. Although an effective and powerful technique, this bottom-up approach typically takes days to complete and does not allow scientists to use mass spectrometers to directly study many large, intact proteins and macromolecular complexes. A sensor developed at the University of Pittsburgh could strip the element of surprise from some asthma attacks by detecting one before its onset. Fitted in a handheld device, the tiny sensor provides people who have asthma with a simple and affordable means of keeping tabs on their condition by measuring their breath for high levels of a specific gas associated with asthma inflammation. Researchers created a sensor reactive to even minute amounts of nitric oxide, a gas prevalent in the breath of asthmatics. The sensor consists of a carbon nanotube, a rolled, one-atom-thick sheet of graphite 100,000 times smaller than a human hair, coated with polyethylene imine polymer. The researchers cased the sensor in a handheld device that people blow into to determine the nitric oxide content of their breath. The nitric oxide level in the breath of a person with asthma spikes as the airway grows more inflamed. High levels, perhaps two-thirds over normal, may precede an attack by 1 to 3 weeks, but possibly earlier depending on the asthma's severity. This week's feature interview, I spoke with Tina Rankovic, the CEO of the Australian Nano Business Forum, about the Australian nanotech industry, COMS 2007, and the recent $20 million grant from the Australian government to help develop the industry. I started by asking her about the Australian Nano Business Forum.
The Australian Nano Business Forum is quite a young organisation. It was the idea of a group of businessmen, predominantly Melbourne-based, but they were at the second National Nanotechnology Conference in Melbourne late in 2005 and decided that Australia really needed a industry body specifically to promote the interest of nanotechnology, recognising that it wasn't an industry per se, it was more an enabling technology, but also recognising that perhaps some of the existing industry-specific bodies hadn't fully taken up the challenge. So they had this idea to form this Australian Nano Business Forum, which they did shortly after that meeting. And a little time later, mid-last year, the Victorian Government Department of Innovation, Industry and Regional Development gave the AMBF a establishment grant, they called it, which really enabled the AMBF to become operational. And so we got started with that, and I was employed just before last Christmas.
It's obviously an Australia-wide activity. What sort of organisations become members of the ANBF, and what are their predominant activities? I mean, as you say, nanotechnology is more an enabling technology rather than an industry. Have you found it's a little bit like herding cats, or have you found that membership has been quick and easy and lots of people are taking part?
Look, it hasn't been as hard as you might think. Initially, we had free membership, and so what that made it very easy for people to join. But when you do the analysis of who are members, it's split quite a few ways. We have industry members, That makes up about 60% of the total group, and as you'd expect, we have a significant group of members who are research providers. And clearly for them, they are looking to be members, they're looking for opportunities to engage with industry and seek sources of places for technology transfer. Government are a significant group of members, and also service providers, and that's very much mirrors the experience in the US, and clearly service providers want to market to industry. So there's others in there as well, but they're the main groups, and we also have quite a few student members. So it hasn't been as hard as we thought, and then later on, in April this year, we implemented a paid membership model. And while it's early days, at the moment what we're seeing is broadly the same percentages are rolling forward into the paid membership model. And they're also spread geographically throughout Australia as well, with, as you might expect, a third of all Australian manufacturing is in Victoria, so that is our biggest membership base, but New South Wales is the second largest, as you would expect, based on population. In terms of some of the mixtures of organisations, we range from companies like Advanced Nanotechnology in Perth, which is well known for its nanomaterials technology, companies like Star Pharma, which is very strong in its dendritic technologies, and obviously that's a biotech application, and basically a third of all Australian nanotechnology companies are in the biotech industry. We've got organisations like CSIRO, and that's good to have them there, Australia's largest research organisation, and then other companies like Standards Australia, who are basically a standards and regulatory group, are also interested in being in ANBF as well.
The Australian government has earmarked over $20 million over 4 years for a national strategy that's supposed to draw together industry, researchers, community and the government. How is the Australian Nano Business Forum facilitating that process, or how is it getting involved in that national strategy?
Most definitely. We've been very closely involved with both input into the earlier work that was done in 2005 and 2006. So we've been very closely aligned with that work. We have a 70-page business plan that's very detailed, goes over 3 years, and we have six core strategies which are very industry-focused. And each of those strategies have a number of action plans that we propose to implement in order to support the strategies. And to that end, we put quite a detailed proposal to the federal government with 10 key major projects that basically all support our strategies, and so we're having discussions right now about funding of that proposal. So we're waiting on the Commonwealth, but those discussions are well advanced at this stage.
COMS 2007 is taking place from the 2nd to the 5th of September in Melbourne. This event sounds like pretty significant recognition for the global status of Australian nanotechnology. Can you tell us a little bit more about COMS 2007?
Well, yes, it is. It is very important for Australian nanotechnology because it will profile Australian nanotechnology in an international forum, but here at home. And it's quite exciting to have COMS in Australia because it's run by MANSEF, which is an international body, and they have never had one of their meetings outside of North America. So this is the first time it's been in Asia Pacific. It's very, very exciting, and we're expecting more than 400 people next week to attend, and that will be a mixture, obviously, of domestic and international folks. And it's certainly very relevant to us. There's a multi-stream program that includes several issues that are absolutely vital to Australia, such as energy and water, and what role can nanotechnology play in dealing with the issues in those sorts of areas.
You're in a privileged position with your high-level perspective on the Australian nanotech industry. What are your hopes and aspirations for the Australian industry over the next 5 years?
Well, I'd like to see quite a few things happening in the next 5 years. I'd like to see Australian industry develop to the point where it recognises the potential of nanotechnology by taking it into companies and adopting it in their new product development. And I think what that will do for us is basically strengthen the global competitiveness of Australia. And that's important. The other thing I see as I go around is I see so much exciting and leading-edge research being done in our research organisations in nanotechnology, and I'd really love to see that come out of the laboratories, as it were, and being commercialised and seeing the nation see a return on its investment in nanotechnology R&D. And I think, you know, what we're going to need to see there is a lot of ongoing nurturing from government, and we're going to need to see the application of some very good commercialisation skills and some investment that's appropriate. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, we need to see the wider community accepting nanotechnologies in these new products that hopefully will come through in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Nanotech Business News. The Australian Nano Business Forum has appointed Dr. Paul McCormick as the board member to represent its Western Australian chapter, and an existing director, Dr. Peter Binks, will assume responsibility for the representation of the Tasmanian chapter. Both placements are effective immediately. Natural Nano Incorporated, a developer of advanced nanocomposites materials and additive technologies, has announced the expansion of its growing roster of top-tier talent with the addition of two nanotechnology veterans. Dr. Robert Daly joins Natural Nano as Polymer Research Director, and Dr. Douglas Kelly joins as Chief Engineer. Nanometrics Incorporated, a leading supplier of advanced metrology equipment to the semiconductor industry, has sold real estate holdings in Japan and California. These holdings include a flat panel display facility and a residential condominium. API Nanotronics Corporation has commenced operations at its new nanotechnology cleanroom facility in New Jersey. This follows from their acquisition of all of the research and fabrication facilities and intellectual property of NanoOpto Corporation. MFIC Corporation subsidiary Microfluidics has been named a technology category winner in the third annual Nanotechnology Briefs Nano 50 Awards. Microfluidics received the award for its revolutionary new microfluidics reaction technology, a next-generation approach in the production of nanosuspensions to help pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies develop and ultimately manufacture difficult-to-formulate drugs. Zyvex Labs has announced its first company spin-out, NanoMed Incorporated. NanoMed seeks to apply nanoparticle technologies for the development of research-grade reagents and cutting-edge therapeutics. Nanogen, a developer of advanced diagnostic products, announced that it's entered into a definitive agreement for a $20 million registered offering to institutional investors of senior convertible notes and warrants. That's business news for this week. Well, that was Azo Nano News for the week commencing 27th of August 2007. Don't forget that Comms 2007 is being held in Melbourne at the Sofitel Hotel from the 2nd to the 6th of September. The Azo Nano team will be exhibiting and would love to meet any Azo Nano podcast listeners or azonano.com visitors. During the Comms 2007, we'd love to hear from anyone with interesting nanotech stories. Just be sure to catch the Azo Nano team at the show. If you have any nanotechnology-related courses, events, or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To review any of the stories you've heard about in this podcast, or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.